Welcome to the UCLA Anderson FEMBA Drive Time Podcast. My name is Dylan Stafford. I am your host this week, and I've got a fantastic guest today. With me is Diego Benitez, who is a FEMBA 2019. He's just wrapping up his first quarter in FEMBA. This is a highly educated, highly make-stuff-happen human being. He has a PhD in chemistry from Caltech, right? From Caltech. Right. So he's highly educated, and yet here he is back again getting another degree. And one of the things we're going to cover today is why, in God's name, with all that education already, is the MBA the next step for him and his career? And you're going to hear about that. Possibly more interesting than his education is his career as a serial entrepreneur. He's currently the owner, funder, and founder of Progress Brewing, and is getting ready to open a winery right next door to his already established brewery. So you're going to get to hear about that, plus some of the other companies he is started in his career, plus two Nobel Prize winning overlaps of his education to where he is now. I'm so excited that you get to meet Diego, because Diego really represents, you know, what as an admissions officer, what I'm always hoping to do, which is to build the most amazing, most interesting, most, I wouldn't be able to meet these people anywhere else in life, Google or Facebook or Caltech, you know, that we have the diversity of talent in our student body that really just no company could ever afford to have this many interesting people on their payroll at the same time. But you, as a person getting your MBA at UCLA, you get to sit right next to people just like the person I'm now going to introduce you to, Diego Benitez. Ta-da!
Thank you, Dylan. It's great to be here. Yes, as you mentioned, I got a PhD in chemistry from Caltech. From 1999 to 2005. Actually, surprisingly, I don't have a bachelor's degree. So some of my friends make fun of me that I'm going backwards, PhD, then master's. I'll probably find some place to get a bachelor's from.
How did Caltech let you in without a bachelor's degree? They can do that, right?
Yep.
You had a body of work that you could present?
I actually went for a summer undergraduate research fellowship in 1999 with the now Jack Roberts. He passed away just a month ago at 98, and he was a fantastic chemistry teacher, mentor, person. He was fantastic, and he saw my work and he said, "Would you want to start graduate school?" And I didn't know that was possible. And he just I followed him to the dean's office, and the dean said, "Yeah, sure. We'll just have to interview him. The faculty needs to interview him to clear that. But yeah, sure. We still have a couple spots." And 2 weeks later, I was a graduate student in chemistry at Caltech.
That is amazing. Because, I mean, Caltech is so intimidating to people anyway. And you just skipped the whole sort of typical entry requirement. This is what I love about my job, is I get to meet people like you. I feel smarter just being in the room with you.
So interestingly, to apply to Anderson, I had to get a dean exception.
That's right. Yes, the dean's special action.
I did not have a bachelor.
We had to petition, you know, and that was like the easiest dean's special action petition I ever submitted, because I did have your evidence point of your completed chemistry PhD.
And she also knows me as Robin Garrow. She's married to Professor Hauck in chemistry, and she's also a professor in chemistry, so at UCLA, where I worked from 2005 to 2008.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that connection. Yeah, Dean Garrell is in charge of all of graduate divisions, so over 120 different graduate programs on tap here at UCLA, of which we are, you know, the largest, but they're our house of record.
And right.
It's to them that we always submit our faculty recommendations. That is so cool. I love that. Well, and tell people, just before we get into your career and your involvement here in FEMBA, but you grew up, you had kind of an interesting, you know, you just grew up, you traveled a lot.
Yeah, I traveled a lot.
Very international upbringing.
Yeah, I have four citizenships.
Four? What are they?
Italian, Spanish, from family, and then I was born in Mexico City, so I'm also Mexican by birth, and I just became a U.S. citizen in July, so I'm a fresh U.S. citizen, so I'm enjoying my time here now.
I am thrilled that you are a U.S. citizen. Thank you. My best friend in college, he just became a U.S. citizen 2 years ago, and he's from Mexico City also. So I got to live in Cuernavaca in the fall of 92.
It's really nice.
And I would ride the bus from Cuernavaca over the hill into Mexico City. It was like It's like a 3 hour.
Some of the best quesadillas in the world.
The city of eternal spring. If you ever want a vacation in Mexico, Cuernavaca is just gorgeous. It's up in the mountains. Like you feel like you're on another planet, and it's only a couple hours from Mexico City.
It's like 40 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. And then how many languages do you speak?
I'm fluent in four, and then I can get around in like three more, and I know quite a bit of languages, so then others become more and more available. But yeah, I think I can probably get around in like 10.
That is amazing. Okay, so fellow 2019s who are listening to this podcast, yes, you definitely want Diego on your gap team because you can choose any that you want.
I don't know any Asian languages, but one person in my section promised that he's going to teach me some Korean. So
good, all right, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
My languages are Spanish and German, and I have not even attempted to learn an Asian language, nor even a non-romance letter based language. So good for you. Korean's a great start.
Yep.
Well, let's see. Okay, so what do we want to talk about first? Do we want to talk about your involvement, your first quarter experience? We want to talk maybe or go back and talk a little bit about your Caltech experience.
Well, I sent you an email because my postdoc advisor, Sir Fraser Stoddard, had just won the 2016 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. And I was really happy about that because my PhD advisor, Robert Grubbs, was also awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 2005, right after I finished my PhD. I got to go to Sweden and I wrote in the Nobel Institute Morricade, and that was quite an experience. And so now Sir Fraser Stoddard, originally from Scotland, he just got the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for nanotechnology, being a pioneer and for the development of nanomachines and other nano devices. And so that was pretty fantastic. Now my two academic advisors are Nobel laureates. So that was pretty sweet, two out of two.
That's amazing. I mean, it's such a honor. It's such an honor. It's a world recognized accolade, obviously. And you've had a sort of a front row seat twice. So, you know, what, for those of us who will never have that experience, what can you tell us? Like, what is it like to know someone before they win the Nobel Prize and then to know that same person afterwards? Like, anecdotally, what did you notice?
The two people that I know personally, my PhD advisor, Bob Grubbs, and Fraser Stoddard, they're fantastic people. And I've seen others that they kind of step away a little bit from their hardcore science research and area, and they start looking into more global problems and how to... You're now a star. You're now a little celebrity. And most of them hate this part of being a celebrity that you get approached all the time. But I think that a lot of the people that at least I've seen talk about it, they use that for good. They use that to further scientific progress, to make people realize that that there's stuff happening in the world that we need to look at in a very, very fact-based way, and not just from what people say, and bring awareness to what's happening to the world and socially, physically, climate-wise, everything. So
it sounds like maybe there can be a downside to celebrity, but at the same time, there's a platform that goes
with
it. And that platform, you know, gives a person who's received that award the chance to really be heard.
Right.
And to make a positive contribution.
Yep.
Well, let's tell people, you know, before we get into your career as an entrepreneur, because that's, I think, going to be very interesting to people. You have like a 15-year academic transcript. You're not the youngest member of the class of 2019.
Yeah,
right?
I'm on the upper edge of age. In fact, a few of the schools that I also talked to, they recommended the executive MBA, but I think the fully employed, or what other programs call the part time, was the really important for me, because I wanted to be with people with stories just like mine, and sharing a classroom with them and hearing their experiences while they're working, more kind of in the trenches, because that's how I see myself. I feel the executive MBA is more a little higher level management positions. I wanted to see people that were doing kind of everyday marketing, everyday small team management, because that's what fascinates me the most about the world of business, the little decisions that actually make a company go forward. That's what I'm most interested on, not on the bigger company style of management, which is very commendable for people, and it's probably even harder, and there's more to do than the trench work business style. But that's the one that I like. So I thought the FEMBA program was the more appropriate for me, even though I'm on the upper edge of age.
We have no limit. There is no limit.
There's still some people that are older than me, but it's actually great to be with everybody from, I think there's a 24-year-old to mostly 28-ish, kind of upward 20s.
I think the average was 31 in your class, like 30.7 was the age at the start.
Yeah, well, I skewed that.
Yeah, but I think we have somebody in their 50s this yep. year, so... Yeah, I always say the younger third of the executive MBA program and the older third of the FEMBA program, it's the same people.
They overlap.
Yeah, yeah. So it becomes down to schedule and fit, tenor and tone. And let's tell people how I almost talked you out of coming to FEMBA. Tell them the story about your open house experience.
So I always had an open house, and everybody I mentioned, even I have a close cousin that I grew up with, Sergio Echeverria. He was a full-time... MBA. He was working for McKinsey, and he came to UCLA, and we lived together while he was getting his MBA.
Really?
I believe he's a 2009.
Okay.
I think so. And so I saw it firsthand, because living together, we were housemates. I saw him going through the program, his friends, the people he hung around with. I hung out with him and his friends for a bit, and so I saw what he went through, and to me it was really important to make a point of why I was coming to
get
my own MBA.
You get that question a lot, even now, right? Why
exactly.
are you here?
Why are you here? You already have a business. Is your business working? Yes, it's working. Well, why do you want to know more about business? Well, to me is an investment, and it was an investment, obviously, that cost money.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA graciously gave me a small gift.
We have a very limited amount of fellowships, but yes, we try to use them judiciously.
Yes. And so a lot of people ask me, like, why do you want to go? And to me, I got asked so many times I developed a canned answer, which was 50% for the network, 30% for learning, balancing my background. I have a very technical background in chemistry and materials, a little bit in medicine or medical materials, but 30% to balance my career. And then I used to joke that it's 20% to know what the hell I'm doing in my business.
Just because you founded multiple companies, you don't actually know what you're doing.
Doesn't mean that you know what you're doing, exactly. And so, but I think for the first few weeks, I was kind of like, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And then it was probably a month in when I started meeting all the people around me, like really getting to know them, listening to their stories, having... so many points of view contributed to my own point of view and contrasted, that I pretty much arrived with this was the best decision I ever made. And it's the end of a quarter, the first quarter, and I'm still there. So I think as classes get a little more interesting, as long as I can manage my time properly, which is always a challenge for everybody, I think that this will really pay off very, very soon. So I'm not concerned about the investment. I'm already getting multiple times out of it, just in stories of people and people at a meeting. That I think it has been worth at least the beginning part.
Well, that is high praise. That this is one of the best decisions you've ever made. It's an honor to get to work at a place like that, because, you know, for me as an admissions dean, it's very easy to say yes to you. And then, you know, and I'm institutionally curious, do we have enough to entertain you, for God's sakes? Because you are highly accomplished. So that's great. Well, tell people the story about how you asked at the open house. I had forgotten this, but you asked me specifically, me, Dylan, at the open house, why should I do this? And I gave you this wishy-washy answer.
Yeah, so I came to one of the open houses and I asked you, as a business owner, what do you feel that going through or the FEMBA program has for me? And I remember you gave me a very wishy-washy answer.
That's me. That's what I do.
kind of just saying, well, you know, the people around and the experience, and it's like adding to your kind of arsenal of skills. And I was like, no, but I want a little more specific, because right. I have all these people that have MBAs that tell me, oh, don't go. It's a lot of money. Don't go.
MBAs from Anderson or from other schools?
Yeah. No, my cousin always said, don't go.
This is the Anderson grad who's working for McKinsey. Yep. He looks at your resume and he says, you don't need it.
You don't need it. They're my books. Grab them. Just read it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
it. My MBA is right there on the shelf.
Just
you got some free weekends.
Yep. You can read through all the books and learn everything you're going to get. And I think that that's obviously a very narrow way of seeing an MBA. Obviously, there are things that you're going to learn, and you can even differentiate from the harder, more quantitative part. But to me, and why I think I arrive with one of the best decisions I've made in my life is because of the people that I get to interact, and also the softer, the material that I'm learning, that it's the less quantitative. And I remember reading, I think it was in Poets and Quants, an article where they look back at MBA graduates, and I think it was a 9-year average from getting their degree, and they asked them, what was the classes that you feel were the most useful in your actual career? And everybody said the softer people material that I learned in the MBA. So, and I'm seeing it as a manager of a small team. I went through organizational behavior with Professor Vendursky, which is a fabulous professor.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she has a podcast you can listen to.
Yes.
Her research on female firefighters.
Yep.
Like, that is so fascinating.
Underrepresented or highly underrepresented.
Highly underrepresented.
Groups. Yeah. And I've already made changes to the way I manage my own little team, and I'm adding things that she recommended. I'm looking for a mentor. She asked that everybody looks for a mentor, and I'm considering getting a mentor.
Wow, so, you consider yourself not to have a mentor right now?
No. Not right now. I've had incredibly good mentors.
Well, obviously
throughout my life.
Two Nobel Prize winning PhD advisors, but in terms of like the structure of a business mentor, that's something that's like an opportunity for you.
Right. And so so I'm looking inside of Anderson just to balance that a little more. And so part of that class, it has already made an impact in my daily life, and something that translates directly to my pocket, because it makes my business run smoother, and obviously there's less problems, and a better performing team gets you more results. And by being a business owner, that actually translates into dollars, like directly. It's not just, oh, I'm happier at my job. It directly reflects on your bottom line. So,
well, that my MBA, I was 2 years out of undergrad. I was one of the 24-year-olds at University of Chicago when I was there in a full-time model. And it was lovely. It was wonderful. I was honored to get admitted. But so much of it, I could tell, was just going straight over my head because I had no life yet. I didn't have buckets to put all that wonderful content into. But I do remember them saying, same type of thing, that alumni a decade out will always focus on the soft skill classes. They said that even at quantitatively biased University of Chicago, that was a big deal that they said that to us. And here I am, 47, I'm 21 years into my career. And, you know, so much of what I do is about tenor and tone and chemistry. You build the structures, you need to build intelligent structures, but then the structures need to really harmonize. And it does come down to talented people have choices. And are they going to put their talent against what the organizational needs are? Or are they going to be kind of doing their own thing? And how do you offer space for both? Because, you know, talented people can leave at any point.
Right.
That's what they've earned the right to have. And so as a leader here of a great team, because I've got a great team, and then as an officer for a university that wants to attract great people, like, I think we're in that same sort of war for talent as a business school that companies are in for great talent. You know, why should I work at Google versus Facebook versus X versus Y versus Z? Well, it gets very subtle. So you're already, I love this. We're on the last day of November. You've founded three companies, and here you are, you know, 10 weeks, 9 weeks into it, and you're already changing your management style in terms of how your employees see you as a leader, and then you're giving yourself access to professional growth by, what would be a professional mentor? You know, like, what coaching does Professor Bendersky give, or do you have any framework to, how do you go evaluate who might be a good mentor and why?
Well, that's kind of like what I've been considering. And so I did have probably my business mentor, two business mentors, and one is very connected to UCLA, Michael Flesch and Richard Zimmern of the Zimmern Center of
real estate. I think they call it Zimmern. Richard Zimmern. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's actually an investor in one of the companies that I started. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so and while I was looking into other schools and other local schools, these two people told me pretty much, don't even bother. Like, wow. If you're going to school, go to the best local school, UCLA. Owning a business, it's harder to get transferred or move around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to go to some place that was local or that was accessible. And obviously they told me, like, why even bother?
Mm. Well, we never want to be obnoxious about it, but we're the highest ranked program in Southern California since there have been rankings.
Yeah, you know, and so I live I live in downtown LA. Yeah. And across the street, there's an option.
But you have local choices. That's right. So thank you for braving traffic. You had to brave traffic today. What are we on, Wednesday here? Wednesday morning, you made it over? Thank you for that. Just tell people how much you've been published, you know, from your academic career.
I had the wonderful opportunity to also be part of a research group at Caltech with Professor William Goddard. And he has been a fantastic mentor, also academic and a fabulous person to be around pretty much since I went to Caltech in 1999. And so I was part of his group. And in between the experimental research that I did with Robert Grubbs and then with William Goddard and also with Fraser Stoddard in nanotechnology, I was able to publish 45 peer-reviewed academic papers, and I have close to 4,000 citations. And I think several fully tenured professors, that's kind of like a 10-year fully tenured professor is what usually have. So it's a decent academic career that I completely abandoned.
You've been in science, you've been in nature chemistry. Those are top journals.
Yeah. Nature chemistry, science. I have two science papers. Also in Angewandte Chemie is one of the important European papers, journals. So yeah, I collaborated with several people on many different topics, usually quantum mechanics or organometallic chemistry. I had several of the collaborators I met at Caltech, and then they were professors themselves. And then I collaborated with them in some aspect of their own chemistry, helping them understand some process with quantum mechanics, or even some of it experimentally. So that was pretty rewarding to be able to work in several fields of chemistry, and understanding very fundamental processes of chemistry that were not very understood. One of the papers that I'm most proud of is a science paper that's called Endless Polymerization, which is about cyclic polymers. And it's pretty much molecules that have no ends. They're tied together into little rings, and they behave very differently than regular polymers that will make up pretty much any plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was pretty interesting. And then there's another paper that I'm also pretty proud about with a Berkeley professor, Professor Dean Tost. And that was on the fundamental bonding of gold. Gold is a noble metal, and so it doesn't rust because it kind of doesn't want to react
mm-hmm.
with things, especially oxygen, to tarnish. But recently it has seen a lot of use in the manufacturing of drugs, and some of the processes were not very understood because people thought that gold was one of those metals that does not really react. But Dean Tost, among other people, but he's been one of the pioneers of finding these very impressive transformations, chemical transformations that gold is involved in. And so with him, we published a paper pretty much explaining some of the basic fundamental bonding that takes place with gold and carbon to be able to make these very, very interesting and time-saving and cost-saving transformations that allow some of the modern drugs to be synthesized. So,
I love it. So if you're getting overwhelmed at this point in the podcast, just hang on, because we're gonna talk about stuff that everybody can understand in just a minute. Brewing and FEMBA Council and such. But I just love it that you give yourself permission with all of that accolade. You have an H, what's your H index of 35?
35.
Which, if we tell people what an H
so
index is.
So an H index is that you have at least 35 papers with at least 35 citations. So an H index of 50 would be that you have 50 papers with at least 50 citations each. So it's kind of like an exponential gauge for how productive and also how impactful you've been in science.
So for those of you listening, because we always hear around here that, you know, our faculty, not only do they want to teach, but they want to pursue their research excellence, and they have to balance those two worlds. And so you had this entirely solid academic career. So let's talk about, what was it like? When did you get the entrepreneurial bug? Because you were a co-founder of Nano Pacific Holdings, which then that kind of became Amicrobe.
Amicrobe, yeah.
And you were co-founder of Amicrobe, and now you're a consultant to them. And now you're the owner and the funder and the brewer of San Gabriel Brewing, Progress Brewing. So you're kind of into the serial entrepreneur,
yep,
at this chapter going forward. How did all of that come to be?
Well, it comes from my parents. My parents were entrepreneur themselves, and even from my grandparents, they had businesses. My father owned a company that made aluminum anodizing for big buildings and construction.
Mm.
And so there was a lot of construction happening around, and I was able to travel, hence why I moved a lot. With that, my mom was part of that business, and then she started a business selling toys when when all the imports from China started, she took advantage of that and started selling toys. So she had to deal with a lot of the customs, and I was close part of that in my teenage years. So that was interesting formation. And so I remember having dinner and listening to all these issues or problems, or also satisfactions that they would have from actually owning a business. And so I kind of grew up in that. And I always wanted to start a business. So at the end of my postdoctoral years with Sir Fraser Stoddart, there was some interest in trying to see if some of the nanotechnology that was developed, there were some nanovalves, could be used for medical applications. And so that's when Nanopacific started. It was trying to commercialize nanovalves to deliver medicine or anti-cancer drugs directly to tumors. That's still going on, some of that research, but it's in very early stages. So that kind of trend transformed into a kind of shorter term, more applicable technology, which was polypeptides, from pretty much developed by Professor Tim Deming at UCLA. And so we licensed them from UCLA, and we made some modifications to the synthesis. We scaled it up. We checked for toxicity. We did some models of toxicity, and that is hopefully will be filing an IND, which is an investigational new drug, hopefully in the next few months. By the end of the early development as a chemist, once you develop the manufacturing process, that gets sent to a contract manufacturer. So there's very little to do as a chemist. So we, together with another chemist, Kevin Ogilby at Amicrobe, we started Progress Brewing in late 2012, November 2012. We filed with the Secretary of State for the LLC. And so we've been operating and growing Progress Brewing since then. And now we're in 20,000 square feet. We have many different beers, and we're actually licensing a building next door for a winery, so we can make wine, cider, anything fermented fruit. So I'm looking forward to that.
And you're in scenic South El Monte?
Yes, as Kevin calls it, scenic South El Monte.
That's awesome.
It's an industrial town east of Los Angeles, about 15 minutes east of downtown.
Longo Toyota, it's where I bought my RAV4.
Yeah, there's some incredible deals.
I saved like
deals.
$3,000 over Santa Monica prices.
Yep. Rent is cheap.
Yeah, so like what's the ratio of what would 20,000 square feet cost you in West LA compared to what you pay now? Like, roughly spoken, I'm wondering.
I would say maybe a 7 to 8 multiplier.
Whoa.
Oh yeah.
Wow. So you can brew on site?
Yeah, we make everything. Our license is a Type 23, which is a microbrewery.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that we serve at our tasting room has to be brewed by us.
Wow.
So you can check out our system that we welded ourselves, most of it. After welding for like an entire week, I started seeing little stars. And so...
Were you actually holding? You were doing welding. Or
I was, yeah.
So you are an entrepreneur because you're doing everything.
Yeah. We had trouble getting a building contractor, so one weekend it was the Christmas weekend we were working, and I said, "Screw this! I'm getting a contractor license." So I studied the LA County Building Code, and went, took the exam, passed it. Got my contractor license, and I'm the contractor.
Oh, I love it.
Pulled my permits, everything.
See, I think entrepreneurship, like you witnessed your grandparents, you witnessed your parents. My mom and dad, my dad's a minister, my mom's a teacher, my grandfather was a lawyer, my grandmother was, you know, stay at home. Like, I didn't have a lot of entrepreneur in my family tree. I didn't have a lot of that on my dad's side. My mom's side had more of that. And now at this stage of my career, it is contagious. It's interesting. Sure. But it takes a certain kind of, you have to bring some gumption. You know, like I got a PhD.
Whatever that is.
I got a PhD from Caltech, and now I'm going to go get a contractor license. Because that's the natural, logical next thing to do.
It's whatever you need to do.
It's whatever you need to do.
It's whatever we do things to do lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I misheard one day Kevin saying, we need to do a things to do. And I heard Arturo. So we now call him Arturo.
That's so great.
We get a things to do, and then that's the next step, and tackle it, do it.
And it's like there's, you're speaking to sort of a learning agility and kind of a mindset. And like, I wonder about the future of MBA education, right? Because the world is moving so fast that we're giving you frameworks and fundamentals, but how do you teach gumption? Because the world that we're preparing for doesn't exist yet. We all know that, except what does that mean? You know, well, it means I have to be open. I have to be curious. I got to be
whatever
hungry.
Comes. Yep.
Yeah,
manage your time, and you're teaching a lot of that. just get on with the next thing and the next assignment, and plan it around, and just do it. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, because you, one of the things when we did our prep for our podcast, you talked about, you know, for you, part of the answer to why are you here that you give people, like the wishy-washy answer I gave you about, well, it's about the people, you're actually starting to see that. But your own expression of it was that, you know, business school is like an opportunity, and there's going to be lots and lots to choose from. And you said you're possibly over-involved here, you know, 10 weeks in. You're the director of, what are you the director of? You're director of the Craft Beer Club.
Craft Beer Club.
Director of the Wine Club.
Yep.
You just did a, what was it? You did a...
I did a presentation to the Craft Beer Club.
Yeah.
On brewing, business of brewing, brewing history. I went everywhere. It was actually a rehash of a talk that I gave to Caltech of alternative careers in chemistry, and so brewing is an alternative career in chemistry.
Yeah, like, and people will pay for it because people like craft beer.
Of course,
beer.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it had a lot of chemistry, but I had to tone down the chemistry and focus a little more on the business of brewing, which has been really, really interesting. And
mm-hmm.
one of the reasons why I got into craft beer business is how intricate it has been, growing tremendously, something mm-hmm. like 17%
wow.
Per year.
Wow.
It's been crazy, yeah.
Wow.
Now there's a slowdown, and a lot of people are freaking out about uh-huh. it. It's changing dramatically. So I think I'm being in the FEMBA program is actually giving me a different view of how things are changing. And I feel that if I weren't here, I would be a little more nervous about it. But just... knowing a little more about business and how markets work, and just being in between people that have positions at really high companies or really important companies, kind of gives me a little more resolve and saying, like, no, everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of buckle up. Yeah,
right.
Because...
And stay open. Like,
yeah, nimble.
Yeah.
Don't spend money that you don't need to. Keep your options open. Try to look for opportunities. And so we've Progress Brewing is a non-orthodox brewery, because the way we handle business, and a lot of people have criticized or told us that we're not doing things right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have a level of risk that it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And having between Kevin and I funded pretty much everything. We own every stock or every cent mm-hmm. out there, and we make sometimes crazy decisions that if we had an investor
mm-hmm.
We would have not been able to make, and so I think we're running it in a way that a lot of people don't understand, and we get a lot the, you know what you should do,
uh-huh.
but I think we're doing it in a different way, and I feel it's better. And
yeah,
it's a more of a slow growth. We're going for the long run, rather than just run with the growth and invest and pull as much money as you can. And
mm-hmm.
and so I feel it's more like kind of like the feel that I have for old companies in the 50s, where it's like, no, we're just gonna run it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
I love that, because Yeah, there's the whole, oh, IPO, you know, da 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 da. But you got to play that logic forward. Okay, great. You have, you just, you know, you're the right place, the right time. You sell out, you get the big chunk of cash. But then what?
Right.
You know, I do say at the open house, we're all going to live to be like 106. You know, like it's like we're just going to have all these things that extend our lives. You know, 70 is the new 40 and all that kind of stuff. So there's something about like grow where you're planted and yep. take that long view that you don't have to. But I think it's a nice complement to the whole sort of overheated Silicon Valley or Silicon fill in the blank.
Yeah. No, and I think it's happening, especially in the craft beer scene in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of breweries open in a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of competition out there. And we made a conscious business decision to pull out of that. We're mm-hmm. not fighting out there with the big boys. And so we're taking a slightly different route. And I guess we'll see in a few years if it'll pay off or not. But I'm way more comfortable with that decision than having just gotten an investor and grown like tenfold and pushing it out there and fighting it out. We'll see what happens, but yeah.
Well, and when you gave your talk on the business of brewing, you donated 12 cases to the Craft Beer Club.
Yep.
And back in the summer at Fembapalooza 5, you donated 4 kegs and you brewed a special Femba ale.
Yes.
You've got skills. You got mad skills.
Yeah, no, I remember at Fembapalooza, suddenly everybody was kind of dispersed and there was like a pretty homogeneous concentration of people. And then suddenly everybody went somewhere and was like, the beer, they're starting pouring beer. And I was like, oh, I need to go make sure that it's pouring right.
There you go. Yeah.
And then half an hour, I think 4 kegs yeah. were out.
Yeah, yeah. We had 1,000 people. We're pretty yeah. capable of... And it was hot.
It was yeah. hot, yeah.
Yeah, it was summer. It was the middle of July.
Yeah, there were other beers that I was picking up my kegs, my empty kegs, and the person that dropped off that was picking up the other kegs, he was complaining that they were full.
Uh-huh.
And he was asking me about if my kegs were full. I'm like, no, mine are empty.
Well, what did you donate the Femba Ale, and then you had there was a Belgian, an Amber.
There was a Belgian IPA. Matisse, which we still have at the tasting room. There's an amber, Wolverine Amber, which we also have. The Femba Ale was a one-off. We brewed it especially for the Fembapalooza. And then we had a Brettanomyces Saison, which is a very wacky type of beer that it's a farmhouse ale. It's very, very interesting. It's one of my favorites. And I think I got the most praises for the Femba Ale, but then the second most praised one was the Saison, which we called Sud Le Mans after South Almonte.
Sud Le Mans.
Yep.
It sounds more exotic in French.
Well, Saison is a French style, and it's from a region in between France and Belgium, Wallonia.
Okay.
And usually they call the beers by the town that they're made in, because they're very boring to brew in terms of recipe. It's all in the yeasts that you pick and how you manage those yeasts. And in those towns, they just open them up. And so whatever is in the air falls into the wort and it ferments it. And it makes beer that is very, very local and typical of that specific place, because they use the yeasts in the air of that place. And so here we can't really, we've tried the South Almonte yeast and they don't work out that great. But so we actually had to use commercial Saison yeast in a culture that we've kind of worked out from 20 different or more, probably like 22, 24 different commercial sources of Saison yeasts, which are themselves isolated from bottles or cultures of French and Belgian beers, and so that's what we made. And then the beers are named after the towns where they're brewed for that locality. So then obviously we had to follow the trend and call it Sud Le Mans.
That's so fun, because yeah. I know about that for wine, you know, Champagne right. versus Cava, or depending on where it's, you know, if it's from France or from Spain or Barcelona. That's good.
Yeah, well, the South Almonte City Council gets a kick out of it because we're calling up Irsut Limon and we're putting the name out there for South Almonte.
You're good for business. Oh my God, I could talk to you all day. Okay, and we're going way long, so I got to wrap it up. Let's so talk about FEMBA Council because you're the internal rep for Section 2.
Yes, I
know how you make time for all this, but I'm glad you do.
You have to, like I said, part of the training is in time management, time commitment. I ran for internal representative for FEMBA Council. I bribed them with beer.
Yep,
and
use what you got.
So that was great.
And FEMBA Council is fun. It's a chance to be a leader and make a kind of servant leadership. So, but a lot of people want to do it. So.
I've done this. I've been in grad school. I know how it is. I know how to talk to professors. I know the issues that go with being a student and also being faculty because I work together closely with faculty. So, and then also I run a business. I have experience. I've lived in several countries. I speak languages, so I can help you with GAP. But I think it was in the beer and the chocolate.
Yeah. All those other accolades to the side. Yeah. It was in the beer and the chocolate. Oh, that's great. Well, this is my new question I'm adding for the 2017 podcasts. You know, see if this helps people. Because I want people, you know, like you said, we learn from each other. That's a big part of the benefit of surrounding yourself with interesting human beings is you just learn from them. You know, you're going to learn from the faculty, you're going to learn from your peers. So tell me, what is one of your favorite productivity tips? You know, like as you manage multiple companies and multiple degrees and you write papers and you have patents, you've got a lot of irons in the fire. So what's something you can share? What's a favorite productivity tip you can share?
For me, procrastination is my enemy. And I think the more that I have to do, the more I feel compelled to procrastinate. But it's breaking out of that loop of pressure procrastination. And I like working at night. Mm-hmm. I got used to, after grad school, there were long nights of chemistry. Chemistry doesn't allow you to just close up shop at 5 or 6 p.m., if there's a reaction that takes 12 hours, you got to baby it there for 12 hours. And so with setting up the reaction and then taking the reaction out, it could probably be 20, 24 hours that you're there by your bench. So
just monitoring the progress.
Just making sure everything is working, learning from what's going on. Sometimes colors help you. Sometimes what's going on helps you. Sometimes you need to cool it down, so you need to keep adding ice for 10 hours. And so to me, it's just finding what works for you in terms of time and then finding those quiet times, and getting the work that has to happen by yourself out, which is part of it is studying and, doing homework here. But, also to me, it helps a lot to do, lists, things to do lists, and then grouping mm-hmm. them by importance and, urgency. And so you pretty much, or the way I do it is, I just throw out everything that I have to do. And one of the interesting things that I've learned from Dylan that I've actually used for that is his post-its. And if anyone could see, the table is full of post-its, but I learned it in the...
Oh, the course we did in Leadership Foundations?
Yes,
our workshop.
Foundations.
Stand and workshop. I got to teach a workshop this year called Stand and Deliver.
Stand and Deliver. And so he suggested that small post-its in a folder help you put together a talk. And so to me, it's more every post-it gets a thing that I have to do. Mm. And then so I download everything that I know I have to do into post-its. And then I organize them by importance and by urgency. And so having the post-its, you can actually move them around. And so you can see how your day is going to look and how you're going to organize the things that you're going to do. And so to me, I usually keep 3 of the urgent ones and like 5 of the important ones. And then I reorganize them. And as I get to do that, I kind of go through my days. I also like to put pretty aggressive things to do. Mm-hmm. And my point is that you should only accomplish 80% of your list. If you're accomplishing more than 80%, your list is too weak.
Oh, I love that.
And then if you're...
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and then if you're going the other way, then you're being over... You're asking too much of yourself. And so...
Yeah, if you fulfill all your promises, you're playing a small game.
Right.
Is how I've heard it. But I like the 80% because that gives you... Because I beat myself up if I don't finish everything on the list. But if you're only... If 80% is the goal, not 100%, there's some compassion built in there.
Of course, yeah. And I think there's the 20% rule.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yep. Yeah. The Pareto principle or whatever it's called. Yeah,
it gives you actually... I've seen that it actually helps you accomplish more. There's like a cushion. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you accomplish 90%, sometimes you accomplish 60%. But 80% is a goal. You want to get to 80%.
Oh, I love that. Okay, you just made my life stronger. I'm going to use that. No, seriously, because like I can make lists forever, and then I demoralize myself because there's just too much.
Right, no, you pick the ones.
You know, perfection can be the enemy of progress sometimes. Yep. That
you pick the ones that you really want to do, and then hit 80% of those.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the shout out for Stand and Deliver. Class of 2020, as you're listening to this, we're going to do it. We're going to do 2.0 for your leadership foundations next year is the plan. So we'll see. I learned the Post-it method somewhere at Siemens, my career before here. Mm-hmm. Decker Marketing, Decker Communications, I think they taught us a class about how to create public speeches. And because so much of speaking in public and be heard, your thinking needs to be clear.
Right.
And the Post-it idea can... You know, help just...
It's a nice, easy tool to organize ideas. Yeah. And so it can organize ideas for a talk, but also it can organize tasks for your day.
Yeah.
And you can unpost them. When you accomplish it, or you can cross them out or...
Everything doesn't get a check mark, but yeah. Well, okay, we've gone really long. So guys, look him up on LinkedIn. We'll have to put the address. What's your address for...
On LinkedIn, so...
Or not your LinkedIn address, but for your brewery.
Oh, so Progress Brewing, 1822 Chico Avenue.
1822 Chico Avenue.
You can check our 4.5-star Yelp profile, or on Facebook, also Progress Brewing. Just no space, Progress Brewing.
Nice.
Also Instagram, we post a lot of pictures. We have usually anywhere from 12 to... I think 20 is the max of beers that we've had. I love sour beers, Belgian, usually Belgian, and so we have a bunch of those.
So 20 on tap is at any time?
More like 16. Okay. Yeah, we've had 20 the max, but...
About 16 on tap, not bad. 16
on tap, yeah. Everything from a cream ale, which is a really light, very creamy, low alcohol beer. We have several IPAs, double IPAs, some dark things. I love playing with coffee and beer, and so we usually have
two of my favorite things.
one or sometimes two coffee beers, and about 4 or 5, sometimes 6 sour beers. We have 2 now that are aged almost for 2 years in wine barrels.
I don't even know if I've ever heard of sour beer. What is a sour beer?
So it's a style of beer that was started in Belgium.
Okay.
Belgians did it on purpose. Germans were trying to avoid their beer getting soured.
Okay.
And so it tastes more like wine. A lot of people say that it's more it's more like wine. But it's obviously a beer. It's derived from a fermented grain. They're usually aged for several months. And their key part is that they're brewed and fermented with a different yeast, not with the Saccharomyces, but a yeast called Brettanomyces, which is the British yeast. And it makes really interesting flavors. So they tend to taste, kind of horsey and rubbery and earthy in a really interesting way. And lactobacillus, which is what makes yogurt, also creates some acidity, makes lactic acid. And so they're very tart, on the edge of sour. Some of them are puckeringly sour.
Hmm.
And so you play with those flavors, with the earthy flavors and also with the higher acidity, Some have fruits added, and so you can create some really interesting beverages that go with food tremendously well.
Oh my goodness. I could talk to you all day. All right, so that's it. 1822 Chico Avenue in El Monte, or
South El Monte.
South El Monte. Thank you.
There's an El Monte City, and then there's a South El Monte City.
In South El Monte, or maybe, I don't know, Fembapalooza 6. Maybe we can contract again. I don't know.
Of course.
It dawned on me sometime last summer. I thought, wow, this guy's bringing all this beer. All these people are going to drink it. I just hope it all works out. Because I had roommates in grad school who were home beer brewers, and sometimes the kegs exploded and the beer hit the ceiling, and you know, but you brought delicious, delicious libations, and we were grateful for that.
Thank you.
All right. So you can visit Progress Brewing in person. You can look up Diego on LinkedIn. If you're in the class of 2019, he's one of your classmates in section 2, so get to meet him if you haven't. Thank you. Thank you for being
any
in the
2020s
program.
That want to contact me or ask me more from the entrepreneurial side, or hope to give you a more specific answer than Dylan gave me.
It's in the people. Well, this has been super fun. Thank you so much for making the drive over.
Thank you,
so
Dylan.
We could do this in person. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. And tune in next time, where we'll have another wonderful member of the community here. And thanks for listening.